Like, as long as I'm still on the earth and upright and breathing, like, I want to be able to go out and run. And maybe, God willing, you know, 40, 50 years from now, like, that might be a 16-minute mile, might be my running pace. And that's okay. I'm up and I'm moving and I'm still getting after it. And so I try to maximize every ounce of fitness and potential that I have right now, and a big PR, and maybe even, you know, it could be something close to Boston qualifying. But what does that do on the back end? Like, does that, do I start playing with injury, you know, really ramping up my injury risk, which is something that I don't really want to do. And even if it's a quote unquote short-term injury, like, I don't, you know, I like running enough that I don't want to be on the shelf for 6 weeks or 8 weeks or 12 weeks with some type of strain or sprain or whatever, just in the name of a PR for a race.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Running Tales podcast, where we tell the extraordinary stories of everyday runners and talk in general about the world of running. I'm Craig Lewis, and the voice you just heard there was that of Denny Cray. Denny is a running coach, an injury expert, and a podcaster at Diz Runs. And if you've been listening properly, you'll know that this is the second time we've had Denny on the podcast. He came on with us almost a year ago, November the 8th. Go and check that old episode out and have a listen to Denny's story in a bit more detail there. But on this week's episode, I took the chance to have a good old runner's one-to-one chat with Denny, covering issues such as cheating within the world of running, just how far endurance athletes can push themselves, and why anybody should get involved in this mad old sport of ours at all. But I started off our conversation by asking Denny the question that he always asks people at the start of his Diz Runs radio podcast. What's your favorite distance and why?
Yeah, that is the question I always start off with. And it's a tricky one for me to answer because it kind of can go two different directions. I think my favorite distance to race is still the marathon. It's a challenging distance. Obviously, anybody who's ever tried to race a marathon knows that it's tricky, and it's a lot of mental battle. Obviously, there's a lot of physical battle that goes along with it as well. But I think I enjoy the marathon because I'm still, quite frankly, trying to get it right. And I don't know that I'll ever get it right, but I feel like, you know, with experience and with having done it a few times and you know, continuing to train and continuing to build my fitness, I think I'm getting better at it. But I hope, at least, I still haven't reached my potential. I hope that there's still room for continued growth and continued, you know, improvements in terms, for me, my goals of getting faster. I eventually want to qualify for the Boston Marathon, and I still got a pretty decent amount of time. I need to shave off my time to get that BQ. So hopefully I can still, you know, do that over the next, you know, handful of years and, you know, get older, because that always helps with Boston too. The older you get, the more... more realistic, I think the qualifying times come, although maybe I won't say that 5 or 10 years from now when I'm 5 or 10 years older, maybe I'll still think they're a bit unrealistic, but ultimately that's the nut I'm still trying to crack. So it's my favorite, but I do think that I'm better at racing the half marathon. And for a guy who, you know, can be a little bit competitive with myself once in a while and try to push and feel like, I don't know that I've reached, I haven't reached my peak at the half marathon, but you know, knock on wood, just about every time I've raced a half in the last 5 or 6 years, I feel like I've really, really gotten it right. And so from that aspect, I like the half a lot too, because I feel like I've gotten it right. So it's kind of a split difference or a split answer. The marathon, because I'm still trying to figure it out, and the half marathon, because I kind of think I have figured it out. But I mean, I'm a sucker for just about any race longer than 5K. I don't like a 5K. Too short and fast and hard, but anything longer than that, I'll take it.
Yeah, oh, that's really interesting what you're saying about the marathon, because I think that is, I mean, not that I've mastered any distance, but that is probably the one that I am coming up, it's hardest for me to kind of come to terms with, because, I mean, it's 26.2 miles. So look, you're not going to go out and blast it. But if you want to kind of get really good times or good times for whatever you're trying to do, you kind of have to have a run at it, don't you? And it's a long distance to run. So I'm a bit like yourself, that my half marathons have been getting, with more training and longer distances and so on, they've been getting kind of faster every time within my own capabilities. I wouldn't like to say that they're fast. And I've done my first ultra recently, but that was nice because I was relaxed and I was jogging around and going nice and slow and having food at each lap. But that kind of marathon in between is quite hard, because I'm thinking I'd like to do sub four. Everything about my times up to a marathon suggests I should be, but I always sort of collapse at that 18 to 22 mile mark. And it's just getting over the line, and you have to keep on running and keep on running at a decent pace, don't you?
Yeah. And it's, I think for me, and maybe you've experienced as well, you know, with feeling like you're doing pretty good with the half, is that, you know, even when I'm not training for anything, I'm just kind of where I'm at with my fitness and my training and my passion for the sport of running. It's like, you know, 14, 16 miles on a weekend is like, that's, you know, that's just kind of what Saturday is. It's not that big of a deal. So it's like, you know, when I get to a half marathon and it's quote unquote only 13.1 miles, when I'm used to running that pretty much every single weekend, yes, the intensity is going to be different, but the distance isn't scary. The distance, there's nothing unfamiliar about that, you know, 13.1 mile distance, because again, probably 2 weeks ago I ran 16 miles just for a long run. So it's no big deal. But you don't do that with the marathon, at least for most mortals don't do that with, you know, oh yeah, I'm running 26, 28, 30 miles just every weekend, unless you're, you know, one of those crazy ultra people where a 50K is just a short training run. And so I think that for me, at least, that's where, you know, I might do 20 miles fairly regularly if I'm training up for a marathon, maybe even might touch 21, 22 a couple times, but that's still 4 or 5 miles at the finish when you're tired. That, like, yeah, I've done it before, but not enough that it's no big deal, and not enough that it feels like, oh, it's only, you know, it's no big deal anymore to just go another 10K or another 8K or whatever you have left. So yeah, it's just, you know, I think for me at least, and for, I feel like a lot of folks that I've talked to, the more times you do it, the more familiar it gets. So it becomes a little bit less of a hurdle, but I don't know that it ever gets easy for anybody. And then, you know, to your point about the ultra marathons, the 50Ks and stuff, at least the way I run an ultra, it's so laid back. Like, time doesn't matter. Like, to your point, like, stop at the aid station. If you, you know, stop and chat and have a bite to eat, and it takes you 5 minutes before you start moving again, you know, yeah, no big deal. Like, I ran a race one time where there was a dog at one of the aid stations. And by God, every time I came around, I stopped and played with the dog for 5 minutes just because it was a good way to break it up. And, you know, so what that it took me 20 minutes longer to finish, you know, a 45 mile race because I played with the dog 5 times or 4 times through the course. So yeah, but the marathon, like, I don't know, I just can't run a marathon really anymore without trying to give it a go. And so it's always a challenge.
So how is the attempt at BQ going at the moment? You say you're a little while off still, but how far is a little while?
It's a lot of while. I haven't really raced a marathon, which tells you how close I am to qualifying. I don't think I've really raced a marathon in like 5 years, but my last marathon that I raced hard, I did tick under the 4 hour mark. I think I was 3:57 or 3:58, something like that. So I'm under 4 hours. But they keep changing the qualifying times on me, but I think I'm now at the point where I need a 3:10 or a sub 3:10 to qualify for Boston. So, you know, plus or minus 45 minutes is what I need to just get under the mark. And then, you know, if you know enough about the Boston Marathon, 9 times out of 10, just getting under the qualifying time isn't enough. Then you still need to shave another 3 or 4 minutes under that time. So I got a long ways to go, and kind of joking, but kind of realistically, it's like, if I, you know, kind of eyeballing about 50, 55, which is another 10, 15 years down the road, where it's like, you know, if I can get 20 minutes faster and 15 years older, that's where the lines start to look like maybe they've got a chance to cross. But, you know, I don't want to sell myself short and say I couldn't run a 3:15 or a 3:20, something like that, in the next 5 years. And I do think I could run significantly faster than that 3:58 or whatever it is at this point. But part of me doesn't, like, what's the point of hammering when I'm still going to be 25, 35 minutes away? Like maybe just run it a little bit more conservatively and not feel as miserable afterwards, because I'm not going to qualify probably either way. But then there's people that go, well, if you tell yourself you're not going to qualify, of course you're not going to qualify. Maybe you could. And it's like, yeah, but 45 minute, you know, PB in a marathon right now, like that's a big swing. And, you know, never say never, but realistically, I don't know that that's in the cards right now.
Yeah. And it's also, you've probably had it with all the guests you've had on your podcast. There's always this counterbalance between enjoying running and really hitting targets, and just go out and run it in 6, 7, 8 hours. It's fine. Mm-hmm. Just enjoy it. You know, the kind of ultra mentality to a degree. And that's fantastic. And then there's also people who say, oh, I want to do my 3 hour or marathon, or I'm aiming to do 140 miles and pushing it to this greater and greater extent. And I can kind of see both sides of the debate. And I think they can exist at the same time as well, but it's, yeah, deciding what type of runner you want to be is always an interesting one.
Yeah, for sure. And for me, the ultimate guiding principle is, and it's, you know, forgive me if this sounds slightly morbid, but like, I want to keep running until they put me in the ground, you know, like as long as I'm still on the earth and upright and breathing, like I want to be able to go out and run. And maybe, God willing, you know, 40, 50 years from now, like that might be a 16 minute mile, might be my running pace. And that's okay. I'm up and I'm moving and I'm still getting after it. And so I try to maximize every ounce of fitness and potential that I have right now, and a big PR, and maybe even, you know, it could be something close to Boston qualifying. But what does that do on the back end? Like, does that, do I start playing with injury, you know, really ramping up my injury risk, which is something that I don't really want to do. And even if it's a quote unquote short-term injury, like I don't, you know, I like running enough that I don't want to be on the shelf for 6 weeks or 8 weeks or 12 weeks with some type of strain or sprain or whatever, just in the name of a PR for a race. So it's, there's a lot of conflicting emotions when it comes to really racing hard, especially for those longer distances. Cause it's just, you know, the longer you're at that red line, the more stress goes onto the system. And if there's any weak links or any areas where there's a, that concern, you know, the longer you're hammering, the more likely something's going to go sideways. And I just, you know, I guess I'd rather be slightly slower than I could be on race day, but finish healthy than really take that risk and sell all out and potentially, you know, hit the home run, but also potentially be on the injured list for a while.
And how is your, I think your other big goal is to run in every state. How's that going?
Yeah. You know, not much has changed on that front. Like I said, I haven't really raced a marathon in 5 or 6 years, and I don't think I've really run even a marathon. It's been a little bit more recent, but I haven't really run a marathon, I don't think, since just before the pandemic kind of shut everything down in 2020. I've done a couple of ultras since then, but they were both in Florida where I was living at the time, and I'd already run several marathons in the state of Florida. So that's potentially going to be changing in the new year. My wife and I were talking not too long ago, and she's kind of like, you know, hey, let's plan something. Let's plan a little family trip or even if it's just, you know, something where my daughter stays home, we get the in-laws or one of the grandparents to come and stay with my daughter and babysit, and we can take a little, you know, little getaway, but like, you know, maybe let's go run a race somewhere. So potentially in 2024, that might be changing. I might try to knock a few states off, maybe even, and you know, don't hold me to this. I hate to say it because people start holding you to things. You start putting things out there, but maybe doing one of those back-to-back two state type of things, which they have over here in the States sometimes, where, you know, Saturday is a marathon in one state, and then you got 2 hour drive to cross state lines, and then you got another race on Sunday. So maybe try to knock out a couple of states on one little weekend getaway and maybe do that once or twice next year. So hopefully if we do this again, you know, a year or so from now, maybe I'll have an update. If I'm doing two races, probably won't have a PR update, but might have at least a state update where I can say I've crossed a couple more states off the list.
Yeah. I mean, I know I heard a lady on your podcast recently talking about how hard those back-to-backs are. And I've spoken to other people who've kind of done 2 in 2 and God, 10 in 10 and whatever. And yeah. I just can't get my head around it sometimes. It's phenomenal, but it's quite interesting given what you were saying earlier about pushing the body and the potential for picking up injuries. I'm interested in some of those challenges for more normal runners, and also what you think about some of the stuff that just these elite runners in the ultra world are doing now. I mean, we saw Harvey Lewis at Biggs Backyard doing 450 miles in 4.5 days. He has to be awake through the whole of that. It's just unbelievable. And I mean, I heard some people sort of suggesting, hey, this is superb, but also probably potentially quite dangerous. And I didn't know if you had any thoughts on that whole thing, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I do see both sides of the coin. I think where it's incredible what some people can do. And, you know, I mean, if I'm honest, I would say that probably, I mean, maybe not, you know, 400 and some odd miles over the course of 4.5 days with basically hardly no sleep. But I think a lot of us, and I'll certainly raise my hand as being the one that, you know, maybe not everybody else, but I think there's a lot more I could do if I had the willingness to push myself to that level of extreme and that level of, you know, just keep going and had the mental toughness and the mental fortitude to not stop. Cause I mean, I don't know. I haven't talked to Harvey. I don't know him, you know, other than from social media and seeing some of the stuff that he's done before that race. And obviously kind of following along a little bit with just the craziness that was the backyard. But like, you know, I mean, you know, he's clearly just a really strong, dedicated runner with all kinds of mental toughness and fortitude, but I'm sure it wasn't easy. I'm sure it was hard. I'm sure there were times that he kind of thought, you know, at some point, 3.5 days in, like, you know what, maybe forget this. Like, maybe it's time to just shut it down. But then still having that toughness, the mental toughness to say, nope, we're just going to start and we're going to keep going, going to keep answering the bell. And again, I think that myself and maybe some others that are listening, or maybe most others, maybe you couldn't get to that extreme, but could go a lot farther than we think we could or have ever gone before. But then, you know, again, at the flip side, almost like with the marathon conversation we just had, and you led into the question, like, what's the trade-off? What's the payoff? And you know, what does that mean? Maybe not long-term health-wise, but like, you know, what does that mean in terms of what your life looks like for the next week and a half while you're recovering? You know, like, are you in a position with your profession where you can take 2 weeks off for a 4-day race because you're going to need 6 days to sleep to recover and be able to move and whatnot? And what's your family situation? Are you willing to sacrifice whatever, you know, missing things with kids or missing things with your spouse or whatever? And again, maybe it's short enough term for 4 days that it, you know, and it falls at the right time when it's nobody's birthday and those types of things. But, you know, it's just the trade-offs. And are you willing to go to that extreme and, you know, have the potential of some type of injury or some type of situation that bubbles up because you keep pushing yourself and there's health concerns. And I mean, I'm in awe, you know, it's amazing what some of these folks can do, but I'm perfectly content to not be one of those folks, even if potentially I could, or wherever I could ultimately end up being, I'm okay being the guy that runs, you know, 40 odd miles a week and, you know, keeps it nice and slow and touch wood, stays healthy most of the time. And, you know, has these goals that are long-term. And if I'm not making much progress over a 2-year window, man, that's okay. We'll get there. You know, we're hopefully, you know, stay healthy and stay in the game long enough that we can get there. Even if it's not as quick as some other folks might.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting how, I mean, it's fantastic the way these people push themselves and the way more inverted commas ordinary runners who I would still say are extraordinary are doing 100-mile races or whatever, or indeed anybody who's doing their first marathon, their first half marathon, et cetera, et cetera. But it is also interesting, I think, how we have this thing where running is competitive, people are trying to push themselves further. And perhaps the downside of that we see is, like, I keep seeing all these stories, crazy stories about people cheating. We had over in the UK two people swapping bibs so they could come through in first, and the poor guy who was the actual winner came in third. And there was this, I don't know if you saw this, there was this marathon in Mexico City where they reckoned 11,000 of the competitors cheated. Why does that happen in running?
I mean, I don't know. Like, yeah, the Mexico City one makes me laugh because, yeah. Like, if clearly there it was pretty well known that you could, you know, that there was this. I don't even know the details, but you could jump on the bus or you could jump on the subway or whatever it was that, like, you could cut the course here. But like I can almost see. I mean, I can't see, but I could almost understand somebody's logic of, like, hey, you know, I could cut the course and I could allow me to win and maybe get a payday. Maybe there's some type of you know, financial incentive for it. But if it's something that's so obvious and so unpoliced or unwatched that 11,000 people could do, well, you're not gonna win, right? Like only one of those 11,000 can possibly win the race. And these days with, you know, cell phones and with just the different ways that people are able to kind of go, well, you didn't get stopped, you didn't get your photograph taken by these three photographers that are on course, and, you know, everybody else did. Like, you know, maybe you could have missed one, but how do you miss three? Like there's just so many ways to get caught. And ultimately, like, I don't understand why. Like, part of my goal of qualifying for the Boston Marathon is that I did it. And, you know, if I paid somebody to go run a race for me, like, well, then, yeah, okay, maybe I could go run the Boston Marathon. But, like, the goal for me almost isn't running the Boston Marathon. It's the actual qualification. Like, I do want to run the race itself. But, like I want to feel like I got to a pretty high level of fitness relative to my age, whenever that ultimately happens. Ultimately, like, what I guess to each their own. And if that is the ends that justifies your means, I mean, it's cheating, but like, you know, I just don't understand. I can't circle the square of the logic that it takes to willingly, knowingly try to cheat in some of these races, especially when you're not racing for the win. Because if, like, yeah, at that point, what's it? So you finished, you know, 4,062nd in the race instead of 4,073rd. Like, who cares? Like, I just can't understand.
That's exactly what I was going to say, Denny, because it's like, I can't understand it, but I can sort of understand why, if you're Lance Armstrong and you want to be the best cyclist who's ever existed, that you might take drugs. Or if you're a sprinter in the 100 meters, you might be tempted to have nandrolone, because that's the difference between fourth place and winning silver or gold. Mm-hmm. But when you're Joe Bloggs jogging around the marathon in over, I don't know, 4 hours 30 or 4 hours, what is the point? What do you think you're doing?
Yeah, I just don't, like, it just doesn't compute as to why I don't know. But then it comes down to ego, right? Because then you can say you ran your 4-hour marathon, but you didn't. But you can say you did, and there's a result that says you did, even though you know you didn't. So I don't know. It's just maybe there's an ethic that some have that some don't. Maybe it's human condition or I don't know what it is. But yeah, I can't understand why that's the case that people do that.
Yeah, because I mean, you've run your own races, but you're also a coach, and you know what it's like to train people up to get their goals, and you know what it's like when you see the sort of joy on their face when they reach their goals, and that is kind of one of the reasons why we do this running thing in the first place, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's so many people that I've talked to, so many people that I've worked with, where it's some form or another of you know, they were a competitive athlete, you know, competitive, loosely competitive, maybe only, you know, in high school or whatever, but you know, they played some type of sport. They played football or basketball or soccer or whatever it is. I guess football would be football for you and your audience, but you know, one way or the other, they played some level of sport in you know, at an earlier stage in their life. And you know, you start to get into your late 20s and your 30s, you're out of university, you're in a job, maybe you've got family situations going on. Like, it becomes a lot harder to round up, you know, 20 odd friends to go out to the pitch and kick the ball around for a couple hours and feel like you've got an 11-on-11 situation going on. With running, you can go out by yourself and run and compete against yourself. Or, you know, you can just have one or two friends and you run together, and there can be a little bit of competition there. So yeah, you know, that competitive side of it. And again, not competing to win, but competing against yourself, pushing yourself to a new level or to new goals or things like that. That's huge for me. It's huge for a lot of the folks that I work with. It's huge for a lot of the friends I've made in the various running communities over the years. And again, going back to why would when you're not the one achieving, then like so the time says you did, but you know you didn't. So like, I just can't even with what is the point? But yeah, that competitiveness of setting a goal and working hard and achieving it. I mean, it's huge, and it's something that I know drives a lot of runners, myself definitely included.
Yeah, and of course, the other thing, which I think these people who cheat probably miss completely, is the joy of just going out for a run on your own, or of going out for a run with friends who probably run all sorts of different paces, but for that one day, we'll go at the pace of the slowest person, mm-hmm. and you'll grab a coffee or whatever, or something that will put on more calories than you've just burnt, and that's the greatest thing ever.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that running is a social connection for a lot of folks as well, and. I kind of joke, but I'm also kind of serious that like I am a massive introvert, which you might not get from the fact that I've talked to so many people on the podcast over the years and whatnot, but like, that's different. I'm talking to you right now, I'm talking to you one-on-one. I can handle one-on-one, and we're talking about running like that. I can talk about that all day, but you know, going to a group run, like that's, even though that's mildly out of my comfort zone, it's still a bunch of runners and we're still just cruising along. And yeah, like there's no pressure on a group run day, or especially if it's with a couple of folks that you run with fairly regularly. You know, you kind of just settle in and you're talking about, you know, running stuff and races, and you're talking about kids and you're talking about work, and it's just that connection to other folks that, especially again, for an introvert like myself, I work from home, I'm self-employed. Like I do this for a living, but getting out and running with somebody once in a while, which I try to do, you know, once a week or so, I've got started a little group run in our neighborhood here. Gives me a chance to connect with folks. And for me, that's enough. You know, some folks, maybe it's not enough of a social connection, but once a week with a handful of folks from the neighborhood that otherwise we probably, our paths would never cross, but because, you know, we meet at the pool on Thursday morning and the neighborhood pool, and we go run for 40 minutes, you know, been able to have some, you know, I don't know, close friends, but like been able to meet some folks in the neighborhood and share that time and really look forward to it every week. So it's, yeah, it's a great social connection. It's a great competitive aspect for me as an adult. And I know I'm not the only one that is able to tick both of those boxes through running.
I can absolutely 100% relate to what you're saying there, because exactly the same here, really. I'm not the sort of person who walk into the pub or the disco and be talking to everybody in 5 minutes. And people are like, Craig, you've worked in the media your whole life. How on earth can you be that person? I'm like, well, it's different when you're doing it professionally, and it's different when you're talking one-to-one. So something like a group run is great, because you can have those one-to-one conversations. It's nice and quiet and peaceful, and you can just sort of chat away and really enjoy it and get to know somebody. I guess a little bit away from the pressure of being in that, really, this situation is a social situation, so you have to be an extrovert.
Well, and even when you're running with somebody and it's a social run, like, at least in my opinion, in my view, nobody gets upset if, you know, there's a minute or two of silence where you're just running. Like, you know, versus, but yeah, if you're in that social, it's a networking event and you just sit there and not talk to somebody for a couple minutes, and that's super awkward. But we're just running and we're just, you know, we churn through, you know, 400 meters or 800 meters. And then, oh yeah, but, you know, what's, and then the conversation picks up something in the you know, the sights of the neighborhood or the woods that you're on or whatever. There's something that spurs another question. And then you're off to the next phase of the conversation. No harm, no foul, to fill every space of silence with some type of something. You can just run and that's okay.
So we mentioned what you do behind the microphone with the podcast and so on. I think there's a few changes in the offing on Diz Runs Radio at the moment.
Yeah. It's times they are changing. It's mostly just me, but I've been doing the show since 2014. And it's evolved a little bit over time. We started with two episodes a week that were both interviews. And then we added a third episode that was quick tip, where I just kind of doing some type of coaching, you know, one-off topic each week, and then cut it down to one interview and the quick tip. And now after nine years and 4 months or something like that, and 1200 episodes, I have decided to not go away from interviews completely, but to stop doing a one interview per week, plus the quick tip per week. Basically just to open up more time to do some other things, you know, some other things that I've been trying to do or halfway trying to do, but I was always committed to doing that interview and that Friday episode, that solo episode each week. I just never got into a good groove of trying to write another book and maybe dabbling some more on YouTube and creating good videos instead of just kind of talking head videos. I've done some of those and it's kind of like, I mean, I don't know, I guess those are okay, but it's just not what I'm kind of having my mind's eye of what I want to do with YouTube. So backing off of trying to loosely go one interview per month still, because I still enjoy doing it. I still enjoy talking to folks, but trying to take the pressure off of feeling like I have to have one out every single week and just kind of seeing what happens. Because ultimately, like that's kind of what I think helped me make the decision, is that, you know, if 3 months from now, 6 months from now, some of these other things aren't happening like I want them to, I can always go back. I can undo the decision and go back to doing an episode, per, you know, an interview per week, or I can go every other week instead of once a month or whatever. But at least try it and see what happens. And so far, I mean, so far this is like week one of not having an interview out. As near as I can tell, nobody's got their pitchforks out. Nobody's marching and picketing and complaining too much. So we'll see. But yeah, it's a little scary to make a big change, but at the same time, I hope that there's enough. I know that there's enough things that I want to do that I haven't had time for. So hopefully I can fill that time productively and, you know, just try some other things. Like I said, YouTube, book writing, and, you know, kind of see where that goes.
Well, I'll throw in the first official complaint, Denny, because I'm going to miss your interviews. I love them, but actually I'm mixed feelings on it, because it does actually give me a chance to catch up with about 8 years of previous interviews.
Yeah, see, that'll make it easier for you to catch up, as you won't be falling behind as much every week that you skip the current interview to catch a former one. So there you go. It's, you know, looking for the bright side of the situation.
Yeah, 100%. And actually, I really love the hints and tips as well, because I think that's really useful. And obviously, one of the things you have as a coach is the ability to really be able to get that stuff across in the way that somebody with that kind of professional expert knowledge does. And I think those hints and tips are fantastic.
Okay, that's the hope. We'll see how it all shakes out. But, you know, like I said, I'm still going to keep doing the Friday episode every week. So it's not like I'm disappearing completely. And then, you know, every once in a while, it'll be hopefully a pleasant surprise when there's a Monday episode and I'm interviewing somebody and you can, you know, be a fly on the wall for a running conversation once in a while too.
So Denny, just to finish off one final question. I just wondered if you, I probably asked you this last time, but it's worth asking again, what you'd kind of say to anybody who is out there and thinking, oh, I've heard of this running. I've seen runners wander along and they're always talking about it. They never shut up talking about running. Maybe I should give this thing a go.
I mean, I think the biggest thing is to not compare yourself with other folks. And I mean, I think that even applies to those of us that have been running for a year or 5 years or 10 years or whatever. It's, you know, if you're looking for somebody who's faster than you or who runs farther than you or whatever more is compared to where you are or where your goals are, you'll find them. You'll find dozens of people. You'll find thousands of people that are somehow more, better, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, almost like, why would you cheat to run a race when, you know, like why why let somebody else, it just sucks the joy out of it, I think is what I'm trying to say. Is if you're always saying, oh, well, so-and-so is faster than me, and so-and-so runs farther than me, and so-and-so does this and does that and does the other thing. Like, yeah, but like, what are you're probably doing something, you know? And if you're keeping somewhat close tabs on what you're doing and your progression, you know, maybe you just started and you're doing some type of run walk where you're running for 30 seconds and walking for a minute. You're like, oh God, I'm only running for 30 seconds. Okay. But you stick with that for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and pretty soon you're running for a minute and walking for a minute, and then you're running for 2 minutes and walking. Like you're able to see some progress. And sure, it might not measure up to Kipchoge or to, you know, any of the elites or anybody. It might not even be at the same level where I am today right now. But also, oh, by the way, I've been running for 12 years, you know? So like when I started, I was probably about where you are if you're just starting. So, you know, try not to play that comparison game. Whatever the quote is, you know, comparison is the thief of joy. And I'm not sure exactly who that quote is accurately attributed to, and if all the internet says that it's, you know, so and so, if that's actually true or not. But I think that the meaning of it is there. If you're always comparing, it's easy to feel like you're less than or you're not enough. And you know, it's a little bit cliche in sometimes in running communities, but like, you know, you're faster than all the people that aren't running. But like, whether you're fast or slow or whatever, like, you're doing something that other people aren't. And it's something that there's a lot of people that wish that they could, or wish they were healthy enough to be able to, or wish that they felt they were healthy enough to do it. So just shine that light on yourself, or shine your focus on yourself, and control what you can control. I can control that I get out there and did a quarter mile today. I ran for 8 minutes, you know, whatever it is, however low it might be that you feel like you're starting, it's still a start. And then you just build on it. You know, I say like you just build on it and it builds over time, and it does, but like, you know, it's consistency. It's keep showing up and not worrying too much about what everybody else is doing, but just doing what works for you, what you need to do. And you might be surprised to hear that it won't take long before people are thinking that they wish that they could do what you're doing. You might not ever know that, but I guarantee you there's people out there. There's, you know, your partner, your parents, your kids, whatever, somebody is being like, wow, like, you know, my dad, my mom, whatever is out there doing this thing. Like, that's pretty cool. And again, you might not ever know that, but I've heard those from other people where it's like, I can't believe so-and-so is doing this. And it's like, yeah, people are saying that about you too. So just keep it, you know, keep it simple, but enjoy it, have fun, and try not to compare too much about what other people are doing.
I think that's so true. I was out for a run with a friend of mine a couple of months ago now, and we spent half of it talking about what other people were doing and how amazing they were, and probably talking about some of the guests I've had on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't too much in a sort of jealous way, but it was also slightly doing ourselves down a little bit. And we got about halfway through our run, which was going to be about 12 miles. And we said, we're doing a 12 mile run today. I'm in my mid 40s. He's in his early 50s. And we were like, wow, actually, do you know what? That's pretty cool. We should maybe celebrate what we're doing as well. And I think that applies to everybody if they're doing 5K at part run or just a couple of miles and whatever they're doing, because getting out there and doing this and really enjoying it. Yeah, it is spectacular and extraordinary, whoever you are, really.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And there's nothing, in my view, at least, there's no run that's insignificant, meaning that there's no run that isn't enough to make progress. You know, you might only have time for a half a mile one day. You might only have time for 5 minutes, but that's five more minutes than what you do if you don't run. It's a half mile more than if you don't go out there. So, you know, it may feel small, but it moves the needle, and you keep moving the needle. You keep chipping away over time, and it's pretty soon, yeah, you're running 12 miles going, wow, I just ran 12 miles on a Saturday morning. I still have energy to go play with the kids and still run errands and do things around the house, or, you know, whatever it works out. Whereas 2 years ago, you might've thought 12 miles would have been enough to put you on the couch for 2 weeks and not being able to move. And now it's just how you spend the first couple hours of a Saturday morning before you go on and live the rest of your life. And it's not overnight, but it gets there, and just start and keep after it.
Denny, spot on. Fantastic. Great advice. And thank you so much for joining me again for another chat on Running Tales Podcast.
Pleasure's mine, Craig. Thanks so much.
Thanks again to Denny Cray for joining me today on this week's Running Tales podcast. I hope you enjoyed the episode just as much as I did. If you want to check out our previous episode with Denny, then the link is in the show notes. Go and have a listen to it there. And if you enjoy listening to the Running Tales podcast, please give us a positive review or rating wherever you listen. It really does help other people to find the podcast. Please check out our Substack newsletter as well, runningtales.substack.com, where you can hear more stories from the world of running. Thanks again for joining me today, and I'll see you next week for another Running Tales podcast.